Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Ravens win 28-14 on Saturday. They start getting ready for Buffalo on Wednesday. Jonas Schaefer, he's an IA Hall of Famer. He covers the Ravens for the Baltimore Banner, and he joins us now. And Jonas, thanks as always for your time. Joins us courtesy of the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline. Should mention that. Jonas, the game Saturday, what was your main takeaway, especially from the beatdown in the first half?
Yeah, I was just surprised at how much of a mismatch it was up front. I thought with Ogunjobi back, with Watt healthier, with Sean Elliott in the mix, with, you know, essentially what I thought was a fair fight, that the Ravens would really have to kind of scrap it out through the air. But they didn't have to. I mean, you look at, what, 50 runs for almost 300 yards, just kind of tell the tape. And I think it really, really bodes well for, you know, what could await Buffalo. I mean, I don't know if, you know, if they finished the season number one, but I think PFF had the Steelers at the line of, like, the number one in the NFL for most of the year. So for the Ravens to go in there, smack them around, use a lot more read option than maybe they had all season, I think was a really, really interesting twist on what, you know, this offense can do.
Jonas, we've talked about the shape-shifting nature of this Ravens run game and all the different ways they're able to dominate football games. And now, through the first 15 games of the season, they used the jumbo package with an extra offensive lineman 12 total times. They did it 15 times Saturday. They did it 13 times against the Texans. And when Derrick Henry ran with the extra offensive lineman, 9 carries, 52 yards, 5.8 a carry, and a touchdown. And we know that the Bills are light up front, and the Bills had trouble stopping fullback-based runs to begin with. Now you add the element of Kohler being back and healthy and a 6th offensive lineman. Just your thoughts on this next stage in this evolution.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what I wrote about, Jason. For my Sunday story, or for my main bar off Saturday, was just like how weird and unprecedented that kind of use of jumbo was. Like, I think basically outside of the red zone, that is the most that any team since at least 2000 has used, like, 0 wide receiver sets in a single game, playoffs or regular season. It just goes to show, you know, the lengths to which coordinators, especially Todd Monken, will go to hammer away at an advantage if they think they had it. And, you know, obviously it bodes well for what they could do on Sunday against Buffalo, because you look at back at that week 4 game, you're like, oh man, the Ravens must, you know, they might really miss day. And you look at the box score, it's like Rashad Bateman, 1 catch for 13 yards or 23 yards. Yeah. Zay Flowers, 1 catch for 10 yards. You know, maybe they don't actually need those guys. So, and obviously that Bills defense is going to be very different with Milano and Jaron Johnson and Rapp, you know, probably playing a lot more snaps they did in week 4. But, you know, listen, I mean, the Ravens, they look like a juggernaut running the ball right now. And if they can just, you know, have 80-yard drive after 80-yard drive, it doesn't really matter how magnificent Josh Allen is, because he's probably not going to score every single time he gets the ball.
We also saw the Ravens really lean into Lamar Jackson's legs. He had 11 carries in the first half. To put that in perspective, Jonas, Lamar hasn't had a game with 11 carries since week 6 against the Commanders. Are you expecting the Ravens to continue to lean that heavily into Lamar running the football?
I mean, I think, you know, I guess my answer is predicated on just how Buffalo chooses to defend them, because, you know, the Steelers in week 16, when the Ravens leaned in on that read option stuff, they were playing Lamar. So he gave up the ball to Derrick Henry, and Derrick Henry, the most surprising part of that week 16 game, by the way, which was made, you know, their success Saturday night all the more surprising, was that Derrick Henry was a lot more effective from under center runs than he was from like shotgun stuff. So for the Ravens to completely flip the script and have it both ways was a really big testament. So I think we'll see, you know, a lot of read option. I don't know, you know, how, I guess I don't know schematically if it's more effective, you know, with jumbo stuff or with more spread stuff, but I imagine we'll see a lot of 22 personnel, a lot of 12 personnel, you know, a lot of jumbo stuff. So I think they will continue to put the ball in his hands and try to exploit, you know, some of those mismatches up front. You know, I just wonder, you know, how effective Taron Johnson can be as an undersized guy who's very, very smart run defender. Does Matt Milano, who I think really, really had a rough comeback to Buffalo, but has seemingly turned around his performance the past 2 weeks, could he be the difference maker that the Bills really, really needed in that Week 4 game? So I give the Ravens the clear advantage up front, but, you know, we think back to previous Ravens teams against this Buffalo run defense, even when they've played with nickel, they've usually done a pretty good job against the Ravens and their kind of heavy personnel groupings.
We're talking with Jonas Schaefer's Inside Access here on The Fan. Okay, Jonas, let's get to the Brandon Stevens of it all. Like, what can they do? What do they do? How do you you can't hide him, I guess. What do you think they're going to do? Because it seems like now the Cleveland game week 18 and then in the third quarter, quarterbacks are just targeting him.
Yeah, I don't think that there's a whole lot that you can do at this point besides just hope that there are still enough good theories, enough good plays, enough good games in him. I mean, I know people, you know, rightly are pointing to him as a weak link and the guy who could potentially, you know, be the pebble in the shoe of this Ravens Super Bowl push. But, you know, it wasn't that long ago that I think he had a very, very nice game against Nico Collins in Houston. And we all saw, you know, on Saturday just how impossible to defend Nico Collins can be. So, you know, you look back at that Week 4 game and it was the kind of classic Brandon Stevens game where it was tight coverage, but there's Keon Coleman ducking on him for a couple sideline shots. So, you know, you just hope that those 50-50 balls that seem to turn more into 80-20 balls against Brandon Stevens are in fact closer to coin flip propositions, and maybe they will fall the Ravens away in a way that they disproportionately have not when Brandon Stevens has been in coverage. So I still think he can be a decent cornerback. I don't think there's a lot of, you know, field stretchers on this Buffalo team that would really put a whole lot of fear into, you know, the Ravens if they want to play single high. But obviously, you know, you just kind of wonder where his confidence is with every single time Harbaugh or Zach Orr gets up, he's being asked about Brandon Stevens. And I don't think you can shut out that outside noise.
Outside of Brandon Stevens, anything else that gave you pause about specifically their pass coverage in that third quarter where all of a sudden third down and long became winning time for Russ? I saw some wide nine a lot assortments, or sort of alignments, I should say, and some deploying linebackers and DBs from the slot that didn't maybe get home. And they also seemed reticent to bring more than four, which may have kind of bit them a little bit in the end.
Yeah. I think comparing Russell Wilson to Josh Allen is just the ultimate apples and oranges comparison. I mean, the fact that the most times in a single game Josh Allen was sacked this year was three, and that was against the Ravens, just tells you everything you need to know. I mean, he's playing behind, you know, one of the NFL's best offensive lines, and even when he does get pressured, he almost never gets sacked. So I think if you're expecting the Ravens to reproduce what they did pass rush wise this Sunday, I think you're probably going to be very, very disappointed. I guess I would say that I would be curious to see, you know, how the Ravens fare in third and longs, because even before Saturday, I think they were having some trouble with that. And you look at what the Bills have done all year, they're not like top five in third and long, you know, efficiency, but I think they're number one in overall EPA, which suggests that even when they, you know, when they are hitting, they are really, really hitting and they're going for big plays, you know, huge, huge margins there. So that would be the fear for me, you know, that even if there aren't, you know, there's not a classic wide receiver one or even like a legitimate star tight end, there are just so many ways that that this Bills offense can hurt you, whether it's in structure, out of structure. Ty Johnson, shout out to the former Maryland Terps. Star, doing his thing in there. But yeah, I mean, you do feel a little shaky about what this defense is when it's not, like, you almost feel more comfortable with them defending a 3rd-and-1 than you'd be like a 3rd-and-7 at this point.
Well, looking at the other side of it, Jonas, you have to like how this Ravens offense matches up against that light Buffalo defensive front, though, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think Buffalo's played in nickel or dime like 95% of the time. And maybe that, maybe the Ravens account for that remaining 5%, like, because very rarely in Sean McDermott's tenure has he had to bow or concede to a team that was just bigger, stronger, and able to run the ball at the clip that the Ravens did. And that was the game where the Ravens just, you know, bent to the Bills to their will. And I think that the Ravens right now have a much better, better organized, better executing offensive line than they did in week 4. So, you know, not a whole lot of, you know, big mean mofos in the middle there. They don't really have a true nose tackle who grabs your attention. It's a lot of guys who will probably try to shoot up field like we saw in that Houston game. And, you know, if they're trying to penetrate a gap and, you know, Todd Monken has a trap or a wham call, then that's an easy, you know, 10, 20 yards for whoever's toting the rock. So I think the Ravens have to find a way to dominate on early downs. I think they probably will have a lot of success with that if, you know, the version of this offense that we've seen the past couple of weeks makes that trip to Buffalo. And, you know, even if they're stuck in 3rd-and-long, I mean, it's the same situation that the Ravens are going to deal with. Like, this is not a good 3rd-down defense for Buffalo, or at least it wasn't toward the end of the season. So you like Lamar being able to improvise. You like, you know, Mark Andrews, Isaiah Likely, Rashad Bateman being able to find the soft spots in that defense if they're seeing a lot of zone. And if the Bills blitz, then, you know, you're going against the NFL's best blitz handling quarterback.
Joe, before we let you go, I know it's early in the week, so we've got some time, but if you were a betting man, do you think Zay Flowers is playing Sunday?
I don't. I just think, you know, you look at the kind of general timelines for these knee sprains, if that's indeed what it is, and, you know, 2 weeks is the early end of the timeline. You know, I think the Ravens feel confident in their ability to produce without him. You know, obviously he's going to be he's an extremely hard worker. He's going to be doing everything he can possibly to get ready for this game. But the fact that, you know, he didn't practice at all last week, that John Harbaugh was so quick to rule him out on Thursday. To me, John Harbaugh saying that he could still play even without practicing was a little bit of a smokescreen just to have Buffalo, you know, have their antenna up for possible, you know, misallocation of resources during a week like this. So I still think the AFC Championship game, if the Ravens get there, it's, you know, far, far more likely than this one for the comeback.
Jonas Schaefer covers the Ravens for the Baltimore Banner. Jonas, great as always, man. Thank you so much for your time.
Appreciate it, guys. Talk to you.
Thanks, buddy.
Coming up next, time for a little necessary roughness. Yes, we're very happy about the Ravens and their victory against the Steelers, but that third quarter defense, if they want to get where they want to go, that's got to stop it now.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how.
Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
Next here on the Fan.
Down to nine. Play clock running down to three. Look out. Wilson avoids a safety. And the pass up at the 29-yard line is taken in by Calvin Austin. Wow. Second and nine. Jalen Warren back in. Down the sideline. Pickens makes the grab. And he goes in for the touchdown.
Al Michaels on the call on Amazon, and the Ravens were on their way to victory, but the third quarter became a little interesting as the Steelers went on a 98-yard drive in 8 minutes to make it 21-7. Then after Derrick Henry scored a 44-yard touchdown run, they hit George Pickens on a 36-yard touchdown to make it 28-14. That's the way it went final. But that third quarter wasn't pretty for the defense.
It was a disaster. They gave up 184 yards on 9.2 yards per play, despite Pittsburgh perpetually being in third and long, third and nine, third and five, third and ten, third and nine. Pittsburgh converted 80% of their third downs in that quarter after converting basically none in the first half. Seven first downs in that third quarter for the Steelers. 11.9 net air yards per attempt and 5 yards per rush. That can't happen again. I mean, that's kind of like middling at best personnel. And you're gifted a large lead. Now, I also think it might have played out differently if Harbs did the right thing and went for it at midfield like he normally would. And I don't know why the offense outthought themselves. And we'll it'll be in my six pack.
You know,
real wuss out move to me.
I didn't mind it because of the fact that the Steelers had shown nothing offensively to that point.
What had they shown defensively?
But the point was, if you're going to push them all the way back to the two-yard line, which they did, I didn't have a problem with it in the moment.
Why don't you just keep running the ball and pick up 2 yards and then run it 50 more and score the touchdown? They had 300 yards in the first half.
They had
19 first downs in the first half. They held the ball for 20 minutes and 27 seconds in the first half, and then you're punting on fourth and nothing from midfield?
But I get not wanting to give them any signs of life or any.
Yeah, that's the way I saw it.
I mean, signs of life.
Well, of course, hindsight's 20/20. I mean, knowing what we knew was about to transpire, them going 98 yards, maybe you do it differently. But I in the moment, I wasn't that up in arms.
They didn't want to blitz Russ at all. Be interested to see if they blitz Josh Allen. But they tried to find interesting ways that I think they thought they were bringing four with some drops and guys rushing off the slot. It didn't seem to rattle or surprise Russ at all. And he picked them apart on third down. They had Adafe Owe a couple times in a wide nine that he didn't look totally comfortable doing. I haven't seen a ton of that from them. I think they need to rethink their third down approach in that third quarter, because that's a team they had under their thumb, and that's a team they had throwing out of the shadow of their own goalpost. And instead, Pittsburgh manages again to roll up 184 yards, 14 points, and 9.2 yards per play in that quarter.
Go ahead, sorry.
Well, I was going to say, what was really disappointing about that quarter is it looked like the first 10 weeks. Guys running wide open. You can look at the first third down conversion, 3rd and 9 to Calvin Austin, 25-yard completion. I know Ardarius was almost there, almost able to knock it out, but he was open in the middle of the field. Then Mike Williams on 3rd and 5, 37 yards. Van Jefferson, 30 yards. You had the miscommunication between Kyle Hamilton and Brandon Stevens, where it looked like Stevens was expecting safety help, and Hamilton was in position, but it looked like he saw something and moved away from the play. And then the Pickens play, hell of a throw by Russ, like you mentioned earlier, Jason, but these massive chunk plays, and it made no sense considering how dominant this defense was in the first half. They gave up 59 total yards in the first half. 59.
You mentioned this feeling like the first 10 weeks. The Hamilton-Stevens, if you watch that over, they're talking to each other pre-snap, and something's going on, and somebody didn't get the message. And Ardarius was a step late on the Pickens touchdown. So, yeah, those two plays really felt like the first
rewatching all those third downs this morning, there were a lot of people who did, like, again, Owe didn't look comfortable to me rushing from that angle. Like, bringing board on a delayed pass rush, he didn't look great. Some of the guys they brought from the slot looked, uncomfortable. And what was left behind them on the back end, not that there weren't always numbers there, there were. I mean, that's part of the reason why you should be saying, wait a minute, if you got 7 or 8 guys in coverage, how the hell is, and it's third and forever, how's Russ beating you when you know it's going to be a moon ball down one sideline or the other? And the degree of difficulty in terms of what you're facing and the multiplicity of it is about to go through the roof. And you're going to be on the road and not home. It just tells you that some of this stuff is still in there. Some of these worst case little brother tendencies are still there. And honestly, if they don't respond with the Derrick Henry 40-yard touchdown run, if that becomes a drive where somebody fumbles or they end up in 3rd and 20 because of a holding penalty, I wonder how the defense responds.
They had the sack. It was 2nd and 20, and he gets the first down on the next play. And then 2 plays later, Henry takes it to the house. So, yeah, it did feel like momentum was switching after the sack. Highsmith gets Lamar. And it's 2nd and 20, and you start to see some of those terrible towels getting waved in the stadium, but they nipped that in the bud pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, the 28-7, that was basically lights out. But I do wonder, again, if that drive doesn't go that way, is this defense able to put it back together themselves and change the tide? Now, they ended up getting pass rush at the end of the third quarter. Matabike took over one possession with the batted down ball and the sack. You had Van Noy and Owe collapse the pocket, and Owe bend the corner and dip in a way I've never seen him do before. And I hope that's something we see in that toolkit more for a huge sack. But between halftime and those moments, there was nothing good coming from that defense, including a pass rush that wasn't getting home with 4.
Coming up next here on the program, it is six-pack time. Our six-pack of offensive observations. Ravens win 28-14. Our six-pack next here on The Fan. It's a six-pack of offensive observations from the Ravens' 28-14 win over the Steelers. And Beltway Ben, let's get started.
Number 6.
My 6 is something we just talked about last segment. It's 21-7. Alex Highsmith sacks Lamar Jackson for a 10-yard loss. It's 2nd and 20, and you're starting to feel a little bit like, uh-oh, something might go the other way here. And then on the very next play, Lamar hits Tylan Wallace for 21 yards and a first down, and you exhale immediately. 2 plays later, Derrick Henry makes a house call, and this game's essentially over.
My 6 is what I was just alluding to. Be who you are in the playoffs. Don't change it. Don't outsmart yourself. Don't outthink yourself, because I really feel like the change in momentum started with them punting when they had shown in this game they could pick up 2 or 3 yards on first down, second down, third down, fourth down, any way they wanted. Lamar on a keeper, Mark Andrews as the primary ball carrier, Wildcat direct snap to Henry, Henry under center, Henry in the pistol. The only thing that wasn't really working was Justice Hill. Like, don't punt there. You don't need the punt there. You've got the three-time MVP. You've got Derrick Henry in the form of his life. You had 19 first downs and 300 total yards in the first half against your rival who was bleeding out. Don't punt. Be who you are.
Number five.
This should be higher, but there's a lot of meat on this bone. But I am now fascinated by the super jumbo Ravens. And it's not just six offensive linemen. It's six offensive linemen plus a fullback plus your best blocking tight end and at times the 250-pound running back. I don't know how teams size this up. The Ravens utilized the sixth offensive lineman only 12 total times through the first 15 weeks of the season. They then went to Houston and used it 13 times. I thought it was a one-off because of, you know, injuries and because they were playing three times in 11 games. Then they didn't use it at all against Cleveland because they didn't need it or one snap. Mm-hmm. And then 15 snaps with a jumbo with a tackle eligible on the field. 15 times, more than the whole season combined, except for the Houston game. That's going to be a big problem for the Buffalo Bills. And they can also change their personnel with the six offensive linemen and throw out of it as well. Derrick Henry rushing with the sixth offensive lineman on the field. 9 carries, 52 yards, 5.8 a carry, and a touchdown. There is now another element to this, and you couple that with the direct snaps to Andrews, which I feel like they're at a much better place with. That is a lot of beef to handle in the run game, and I don't know how many teams can handle it.
My five is Roger Rosengarten, and TJ Watt could be hurt, and I think it's obvious he is hurt, but all I heard all week was Roger Rosengarten shut out TJ Watt the first time they played. No way that's happening again. We heard it everywhere. I think we even talked about it a little bit. Well, he did shut out TJ Watt again, so credit to Roger Rosengarten.
Number four.
Four is the opening drive. Like, we talked about how this team needed to start fast, and Sims muffs the punt, and they start the five-yard line. Oh, and they got a false start penalty there as well. And all Lamar does is take them on a 13-play, 95 yards. A drive in which he kept the ball, I think, five times when they were selling out to stop Derrick Henry. Finishes with a beautiful touchdown pass on third and 13 to Bateman. They get that touchdown on the opening drive. It was beautiful.
Yeah, I'm with you at four where you were on Rosengarten, but I'm not just going to focus on him. The pass protection did the job. I don't know what's going on with Watt either. I didn't think he'd be held off the stat sheet again. He was. They only give up one sack in this game. Look, I'm also not going to tell you that a 56% pressure rate allowed at home when Watt's probably not healthy is ideal. Like, Lamar covers so much up. But the bottom line is, one sack, not a whole lot of screwing up behind the sticks. I'm not putting it higher because it was such a low volume pass game because of the way game flow went. If they had to throw the ball more, I do wonder how those guys held up. But hats off. Pass pro basically did the job.
Yeah, I'm with Kim. We'll get more into the opening drive and Monken on the other side. And the Tylan Wallace, I mean, that's one of the more underrated plays of that football game on second and 20.
Great tackling by the Steelers there, by the way. We're doing the six-pack of offensive observations. And Beltway Ben, let's continue.
Number three.
Bone fast start has to be in the top three. It's the fundamental thing that's been lacking in this offense. If you want to look at the playoff foibles and all the playoff concerns we've had, it's been the bottled up into the slow starts. For them to have three offensive touchdowns in the first half, they had three offensive touchdowns in the first half of their six previous games with Lamar in the postseason. Holding the ball for 9 minutes and 47 seconds in the first quarter. And that opening drive, 13 plays, 95 yards, 9 of it on the ground, 7 of 8 on third downs in the first half. All of that is exactly what the doctor ordered. I thought Monk scripted up expertly. The passes Lamar did make on that first drive were high percentage passes up until the third and 13 to Bateman, where that's where your MVP has got to be your MVP. But this is exactly how they needed to exert their will offensively. And then that same script should work in Buffalo.
You know, it's interesting. I feel like there's almost four ones here. There's so much meat on this bone, and that's hey bone, and that's why the opening drive ended up being four to me. Three for me is the touchdown from Lamar at the end of the first half, which was the ultimate no yes play where he's got 11 seconds. You heard Harbaugh after the game said the clock was moving much faster in my head than it obviously was in Lamar's. He knows he's got no timeouts. If he gets sacked, they don't get any points, and yet he's able to move around and eventually hit Justice Hill for the touchdown. It was spectacular.
Number two.
Two was Lamar Jackson's first signature playoff game. Like, we've been waiting for this. He had yet to have a very good playoff game. And, yeah, the numbers aren't, like, ridiculous. But Lamar Jackson played his rear end off, and he gave you four quarters of quality football.
Number two is all hail King Henry. He is now obviously totally comfortable here, and they are totally comfortable figuring out how to use him. I mean, how about this, guys? He runs 26 times in a playoff game. In a game where you knew they were basically just running the football, only two runs for 0 or negative yards out of 26. Meanwhile, 10 runs of 5 yards or more, four runs of 12 yards or more. He averages 6.4 per carry when there's an 8-man box, which he faced just under 66% of the time. 8.2 per carry on first down. 9.8 per carry when he ran out of the gun. Absolute balance. 13 carries under center, 13 carries out of the gun. And as I mentioned earlier, 9 of those 13 under center carries were with 6 offensive linemen, and he had 5A to carry that way too. They now are totally comfortable deploying him different ways, and he is exactly what they prayed and hoped he would be.
Number one.
I gotta put Lamar at one. Lamar carrying over into the regular season. Look, if they ran the ball well and lost, we'd all be screaming about Lamar if he had these same sorts of numbers. Like, Lamar had to make winning plays on third down. Lamar had to come out and look sharp early in the game. And Lamar's willingness to use his legs the way he did, I think, opened things up big time for Derrick Henry, because they did what I told you they were going to do. They didn't want Derrick Henry to beat them in this game, and Lamar knew that as well. So he ran so much that now you really are picking your poison. No major mistakes. He threw the ball away sometimes and scudded it when he needed to scud it rather than forcing it. He wore all those losses. He's my number one in this win. He's going to be like an MVP in the playoffs and the regular season for the first time.
Derrick Henry's my one because he's the headliner of this whole thing. 180 plus yards and 2 touchdowns. And it was amazing to me, Jason, watching him, like the quick cutbacks on those plays where, and they'd be like 8-9 yard chunks. It was similar to what he did the game a few weeks ago, but just like he asserted his will on the Pittsburgh Steelers defense, whether it was under center, in the pistol, in the wildcat. He just destroyed and bludgeoned the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Way to take down the ginger gorilla.
Henry's been unbelievable, and every single week he still blows my mind, but he's had great playoff games. That was Lamar's first four-quarter game, and in large part because of that hot start, I think, that was able to settle him down. So I think Lamar needed to be one.
If you didn't get enough of Bone there, guess what? Coming up next, it's T-Bone time. TMI with TIM. What you got?
Yeah, we're going to continue to give Todd Monken his kudos, and we talked all week long about the need to start fast, and I thought it was a Todd Monken masterclass to open this football game in the first half, but especially the first drive. We'll get into it next on The Fan.
It's T-Bone time, TMI with TIM. Floor is yours.
Everyone knows that we are all big Monk fans.
Oh, yeah.
And we are guaranteed at least one more monkey business, Jason, on Thursday. At least one more.
At least, Bone.
Savor it, because this guy, he deserves a head coaching gig.
Yes, he does.
He absolutely deserves a head coaching gig, and I understand it's a low bar. He's the best offensive coordinator in the history of this franchise, and I don't even
not close.
I don't even think it's close at all.
The Kubiak year gets mythologized here.
Yes, it does.
This is
what Monken has done in his 2 years here is amazing, and hopefully there's still a couple more games to go, and he's hoisting a Lombardi. But that was Lamar Jackson's first vintage game in the playoffs, four quarters, and it started with that first drive. And we gave you all the numbers for how terrible this offense has been in the first half of playoff games, with Lamar averaging just 6 points per game. They've never had an opening drive for a touchdown until Saturday night. And it was really a poor position that they were in, pinned at the 5-yard line, because Steven Sims decided to field a punt inside the 4-yard line and muffed it. And then You get the false start penalty by Ronnie Stanley to make it 2nd and 11 at the 4-yard line. Lamar gets that layup pass to Isaiah Likely, and then there were 5 straight runs. And I understand that there are options, and it's getting Lamar involved in the game early, getting him confidence early in this football game. And his 11 carries in that first half, we said this with Jonas, he hasn't had 11 carries in a football game since week 6. He had that in the first half. 15 carries in that game, most he's had since week 1, when he had 16 carries against the Chiefs. And he was so damn accurate and pinpoint. And the first half numbers, 13 for 15, 144 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 incompletions were on a throwaway and a spike. He was fantastic. The Derrick Henry wildcat on that, we hadn't seen that all year long. How were the Ravens going to adapt without Zay Flowers? Talked about the extra offensive lineman with Josh Jones. Anthony Miller caught 3 passes. We haven't mentioned it. Steven Sims,
yeah,
had an end-around.
Steven Welcome
Sims
to town.
Had an end-around and took it 15 yards.
You know, it was interesting, game. To your point, he was on the field a bunch. I'm like, what the hell, Steven Sims, yes, on the field? And then I guess we're just going to keep you honest. We're going to give him a reverse, and yeah, he takes it 15 yards.
They had 5 drives of 9 plays or more. We haven't even brought up the second touchdown drive. 13 plays. 13 rushes on that drive. Keep it simple, stupid there. First 32 plays, only 8 were passes. They just absolutely dominated that football game, and Todd Monken deserves a ton of credit. Without your Pro Bowl wide receiver to still rack up nearly 300 yards rushing and do it in a different way. This rushing attack has been so, so good, but it's different chapters throughout this season in terms of their dominance, and now we're in a brand new chapter with this heavy personnel, with the extra offensive lineman.
By the way, remember we talked a lot last week, they never had a halftime lead in a Lamar playoff game. Well,
nope.
21
minus 30 point differential.
Never scored more than 10 points, yeah, in a first half under Lamar Jackson in a playoff game. They obliterated all of those.
Coming up next, Ravens win 28-14. Harb spoke today. Our own Cordell Woodland was there. He joins us next here on The Fan.